Things were finally looking up for the deep encounter. By late afternoon, except for 10 who were too injured to be moved, all but 100 of the survivors from the Emerald Dolphin had been ferried over to the Earl of Wattlesfield. Without the horde of survivors on board, the battered survey ship rose 5 feet out of the water. The crew then went to work and shored up the badly damaged hull plates, which reduced the incoming flow and enabled the pumps to gain on the flooding. The Australian-guided missile frigate arrived and added their boats to the ferry operation, taking the survivors who dropped down the ropes from the bow and relieving the exhausted boat crews from deep encounter. The first tug to reach the Emerald Dolphin was the Quest Marine Offshore Company's Audacious. At 190 feet in length, with a beam of 58 feet, she was one of the largest tugs in the world. Her twin Honeywell diesel engines provided a total of 9,800 horsepower to drive her propulsion units. Captain Jock McDermott wasted no time. After circling the derelict and seeing that the rudder looked to be set in the flat zero-degree position, he brought the Audacious to within 200 feet of the Emerald Dolphin's bow. He could only hope the rudder was frozen in place. If it moved, the hulk would shear off to the side and become impossible to control. With no power on board the Emerald Dolphin, it was no small chore to lift aboard the tug's massive 8-inch diameter tow cable that weighed 1 ton per 100 feet. By using the bollard as a pulley, the winch was engaged and began pulling the line running between the two ships around a small drum attached to the main winch. A 2-inch cable that had been attached to one end of the line soon began winding itself around the bollard and back to the tug again. The other end of the cable was connected to the big 8-incher, which was then pulled up to the bow of the cruise ship and clamped with a series of U-bolts to the anchor chains. Ordinarily, a small crew would remain on board a derelict under tow, but without knowing to what extent the fire had ravaged the hull, there was too great a danger for the men to remain on board the Emerald Dolphin. If she should abruptly head for the sea floor, they might not have time to escape and would be sucked down with her. Finally, McDermott gave the order for dead slow ahead. First Mate Arl Brown, who was operating the gigantic tow winch, paid out the cable until the cruise ship was a good quarter of a mile astern. Then he set the brake. The slack went out of the cable, and the winch took up the strain as the Audacious began to inch forward. 10 hours later, the Audacious's big engines were towing the enormous hulk at a respectable 2 knots. Most of the fire was out. Only a few flickers of flame could still be seen in the dark night amid the twisted wreckage of the superstructure. The crew took turns on watch, making sure the big tow followed behind as planned. After midnight, the ship's cook took his turn. 2 hours later, he was barely awake, fighting off drowsiness with his 10th cigarette and 3rd Pepsi. Suddenly he heard what sounded like a deep rumble come from within the hulk of the Emerald Dolphin. The cook's face froze in horror. The Emerald Dolphin was foundering, and she looked to be going down fast. In shock, he ran up onto the bridge to shout, "She's sinking! Holy Mother, she's going under!" McDermott heard the commotion and burst from his cabin. One look was enough to tell him that if they didn't cut the tow cable, the sinking liner would take the Audacious and her crew 20,000 feet to the sea floor. Frantically, they struggled to release the brake, paying out the massive cable, watching it unreel into the abyss, rapidly falling from a near-horizontal angle to vertical as the cruise ship buried her bow in the water. The great cable that was wound around the winch's drum began to unreel ever faster until it became a blur. McDermott and Brown could only hope that when the cable finally unwound, its end would rip from its connectors. If not, the Audacious would be pulled under. The dead cruise ship was plunging with uncanny speed. Already her bow was diving beneath the surface. The stern hung for a few seconds, and then slowly it followed the bow into the black sea, until the entire ship plummeted out of sight, leaving a great swelling of air bubbles. Only one row of cable remained wound around the reel, but suddenly it became taut, and the stern of the tug dipped abruptly, jerking the bow out of the water. There came an ear-splitting shriek, and then the end of the cable shot off the drum and whipped out of sight into the sea. Released from the strain, the tug's bow came down hard as she righted herself, rocking on her keel forward and aft before settling down. The crew stood in stunned silence at their narrow brush with death. Finally, Brown muttered, "I never believed a ship could sink in the blink of an eye."
"Nor I," McDermott agreed. "It's as though her entire bottom dropped out."
Then McDermott paused and held up a hand.
"Listen," he said sharply.
Everyone gazed at the spot where the Emerald Dolphin had vanished. Out of the night, a voice was shouting,
"Help me!"
Brown ran over to the searchlight, swung it around, and played its beam on the water. The dark face of a man could barely be seen against the ebony sea less than 100 feet off the stern.
"Throw him a line," Brown ordered a crewman, "and haul him in before the sharks get him."